Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text 35. Kshetra Kshetra Gayor Evam. Kshetra Kshetra Gayor Evam. Antaram Jnana Chakshusha. Antaram Jnana Chakshusha. Bhuta Prakriti Moksham Cha. Bhuta Prakriti Moksham. Bhuta Prakriti Moksham Cha. Ye Vidur Yanti Te Param. Ye vidur yanti te param. Kshetra. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Those who see with eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the knower of the body, and can also understand the process of liberation from bondage in material nature, attain to the supreme goal. Purport. The purport of this 13th chapter is that one should know the distinction between the body, the owner of the body, and the supersoul. One should recognize the process of liberation as described in verses 8 through 12. Then one can go on to the supreme destination. A faithful person should at first have some good association to hear of God, and thus gradually become enlightened. If one accepts a spiritual master, one can learn to distinguish between matter and spirit, and that becomes the stepping stone for further spiritual realization. A spiritual master, by various instructions, teaches his students to get free from the material conception of life. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, we find Krishna instructing Arjuna to free him from materialistic considerations. One can understand that this body is matter. It can be analyzed with its 24 elements. The body is the gross manifestation, and the subtle manifestation is the mind and psychological effects. And the symptoms of life are the interactions of these features. But over and above this, there is the soul, and there is also the supersoul. The soul and the supersoul are two. This material world is working by the conjunction of the soul and the 24 material elements. One who can see the constitution of the whole material manifestation as this combination of the soul and material elements, and can also see the situation of the supreme soul, becomes eligible for transfer to the spiritual world. These things are meant for contemplation and for realization, and one should have a complete understanding of this chapter with help of the spiritual master. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tangsa Jivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Shrutam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamsta Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorange Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Translation, those who see with eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the knower of the body, and can also understand the process of liberation from bondage in material nature, attain to the supreme goal. So it's actually very interesting how Srila Prabhupada begins this purport. Srila Prabhupada begins by saying the purport of this 13th chapter is that one should know the distinction between the body, the owner of the body, etc. So the purport begins with the word the purport. It shows that this last purport is a summary of the whole chapter. I'd like to try to summarize the whole chapter. How many of you have been here since the beginning of the 13th chapter, attending all the Bhagavad Gita classes in the evening? So that is why I thought to do a summary, so that we can all kind of put it back, you know, into context and put all the pieces together. So the first 9 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita explain how through karma we can come to bhakti. And the middle 6 chapters, they talk about pure devotional service. And Krishna himself, he speaks directly about himself. Now, the last 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, starting with this 13th chapter, describe how jnana can bring one to bhakti. So this 13th chapter is very technical. Because it's so technical, most of the end of the chapter is a repetition of the earlier verses. And then the last verse is a summary of the whole chapter. So when something is very technical, it's good to continue to repeat it over and over. So Arjuna begins the 13th chapter by asking Krishna 6 questions. And Krishna answers the 6 questions in the whole 13th chapter. quite systematically. So the first question Krishna answers is, who is the knower of the field? What is the field of activities, and who is the knower of that field? So Krishna describes these two aspects in the second verse up to the seventh verse. And he says that this is knowledge. So the field of activities is a very interesting concept. The field of activities is different than the body. Like, you can compare it to, like the acharyas, they compare it to a child in a playground. You see, a child is in his backyard and he has a playground. And around the playground there's a fence. So the child is playing with different toys, getting a little bit of enjoyment here and there, but the child can't go beyond the fence. So similarly, every knower of the field has a field, but that field has limitations. So the 13th chapter describes how the field of activity is comprised of 24 elements. You know, the 10 senses, the 5 gross elements, mind, intelligence, false ego, the unmanifest, and like this, 24 elements are there. Now, when these 24 elements interact with each other, they create 7 products that manifest through the mind, like happiness, distress, hate, attachment. And this field, just like we see in nature, we see that there are seasons, there are phases that nature goes through. So similarly, this field of activities goes through different phases, 6 different phases. It's born, it stays for some time, it produces byproducts, it dwindles, it dies, like this, it grows. So like this, it goes through 6 different phases. So what determines what's inside of that playground? Like, what determines my field of activity, like the difference in my field of activities or the difference in someone else's field of activities, right? So the difference is based on our karma. Due to our karma, we have a mind and a body, a certain mind and a certain body. And this certain mind and this certain body causes us to have different experiences. Like, for example, the acharyas explain that a worm, an earthworm, has a very limited mind and body. And so the earthworm can't experience what a human being can experience. So its field of activities is limited. Just like the playground or the backyard is fenced in. There's a fence. And depending on how much space is between those fence pieces, that's what can come in. Now, the knower of the field, there are actually 2 knowers of the field. There's the soul and then there's the super soul. And just these two, just knowing these two things, the field of activities and the knower of the field, or the 2 knowers of the field, is considered to be knowledge. Then Krishna explains from the 8th to the 12th verse, that what is the process to realize that knowledge, to obtain that knowledge? Basically, how to get out of the backyard. You know, we're all in this field of activities, and how to get out of that field of it, how to get out of this field of activities. Very interesting that the field of activities is within. Like, we're going around and we're interacting with the world, and we think that activity is going on. But the real activity is actually going on within. So to understand this, we can give a simple example. I'm traveling, like I walk into this temple, and I experience the wonderful atmosphere, and I smell the incense. So what's happening is my senses, my knowledge acquiring senses are gathering information or things from outside, and they're coming within. And then based on my mind, based on the conditioning of my mind, I'm taking those experiences, and I'm having different kinds of feelings. See? So it's actually all happening, you know, within. Now, this is the first two aspects of this chapter. Now, the third aspect is the object of knowledge, which is explained from the 13th to the 19th verse. Basically, knowledge is knowing these two things, and the object of knowledge means what is the real goal of this knowledge. So, because the field of activities is temporary, there's no real need to consider what is the object of knowledge, because it's temporary. So Krishna focuses on the two knowers of the field as the object of knowledge. As you can see, it's quite technical. Then, from text 20 to 27, Krishna talks about Prakriti and Purusha. Prakriti means material nature, and Purusha means the enjoyer. One of the first verses that I came upon, or that I memorized, was in the 13th chapter, text 23. Jai Sri Sri Radha Gopinath ki, Sri Gopalji ki, Sri Sri Gaurinitya ki jai. Upadrashta anumanta cha bharata bhokta maheshwaraha paramatme tichapyukto dehismin purusha paraha. The Lord is saying, I am the overseer, I am the permitter, I am the enjoyer, I am the Lord, and I am the master. Mentions these five qualities. These are the five qualities of the Supersoul, the Purusha. Then Krishna summarizes the chapter from text 27 to 34. Same kind of concepts are repeated. And then today's verse is a summary of the whole chapter. So, in this last verse, Srila Prabhupada explains what is the benefit of all this jnana. He says, if you know the soul, if you know the super soul, and you know the elements of material nature, if you can see these three things and how they interact, and how this is all there is in material creation, then you are eligible to go back to Godhead. So that's the benefit of trying to understand this chapter. It's very interesting that at the end of the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that one should, he uses two words here, one should contemplate and one should try to realize this subject matter. So how to start? How to start to realize these things? That brings us back to text 8 to 12. Very special verses in Bhagavad Gita. It starts with Amanidvam Adambidvam. Humility. Amanidvam means humility. Adambidvam means pridelessness. So, Krishna is explaining, if you want to obtain knowledge, these are the things that you should strive for. It begins with humility. There are two definitions of humility that are given by Srila Prabhupada in the purport. One is to not be anxious for adoration. And the other is to not be anxious for to avoid discredit. So humility is very much exemplified by Srila Prabhupada's life and the previous acharyas. There's a story that Radha Gopinath Prabhu always tells of this yogi. He would meditate all year round, and one day of the year he would come out of his cave, and he had a little bit of a following, and so his followers, they would come and they would see him on that day that he would come out of his cave, and he would give his darshan, and he would just spend time with them, and then you go back in his cave. And the rest of the year he'd be in his cave meditating. So every year he'd come out and he would have his following there. And one year he came out, no one was there. So he was looking around. He was thinking, okay, they're on their way. Time went by, no one came. So he thought, okay, let me just see, maybe they're coming. So he went up the tree and he looked. He couldn't see anyone, so he went higher and higher and higher. And eventually he went so high that the branch broke and he fell off. And so the point is that he wanted some he was looking for some adoration, some fame in his austerities. And similarly, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj told one devotee, why are you so shy? Why do you find it so difficult to give class? And Maharaj explained that it's not important if you give a good class or you give a bad class. What's most important is that you glorify in Krishna. One time Srila Prabhupada was seeing parents of one of his disciples, and he was explaining to these his parents of one of his disciples that we don't have any ambition as devotees. We're simply satisfied with humble menial service to Krishna. That's all we want in life, just a little bit of service. So some of the devotees were thinking that this might come off in the wrong way. Like, the parents might take it in a wrong way, that why is my son not, you know, being something in this world, da da da. So Srila Prabhupada then said that everyone has to serve. So a devotee serves the most regal person in creation. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. There's no one more regal, more opulent, more worth serving than Krishna. So a devotee is very proud that they can serve such a great master. That's the pride that a devotee has. Another time, Srila Prabhupada was finishing prasadam, and he asked Shrutikirti Prabhu, his personal servant, do you take rest after lunch? Shrutikirti Prabhu said, no. And Srila Prabhupada said, I'm an old man, and because I'm an old man, I'm not able to take rest for a long duration. So therefore I need to take a little nap after lunch, prasadam. Srila Prabhupada didn't have to explain himself. Out of his humility, he was explaining. And then another time, Srila Prabhupada said that it was in the LA temple, there was a devotee who was chanting japa in the afternoon while Rukmini Dwarkadish were taking rest. And Srila Prabhupada was also taking rest. Srila Prabhupada, he woke up and he told his servant, go tell that devotee to chant more softly because the Lord is taking rest. So Shrutikirti Prabhu's realization was that Srila Prabhupada wasn't concerned about his own sleep. He was concerned about the sleep of the Lord. So that's, again, his humility. In the purport here, Srila Prabhupada says, a faithful person should at first have some good association to hear of God and thus gradually become enlightened. So these classes are opportunities to associate with Srila Prabhupada and his purports. To steadily come for class requires humility. And Srila Prabhupada one time told his servant, where were you during class? And his servant said, I was making breakfast for you, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said, anyone can make breakfast for me. You should attend the class. So that was to his personal servant. So Srila Prabhupada really emphasized class as an opportunity for everyone to come together and to get purified. The speaker gets purified, the audience gets purified. It purifies the atmosphere. It's all beneficial. Another way to associate with Srila Prabhupada is through his books. And one of my services is keeping in touch with people all over the world who come to visit here. So a while back, I received this letter, and I'd like to read it to you. This happened. Okay. My life was mundane and boring. until I reached the age of 14, when my mother threw me out of home and my father refused to look after me because his second wife didn't like me. It's not that he had two wives and there was no room. I mentioned second wife because my parents split when I was 7 years old. So life started at a young age for me. I stayed at a friend's house and had to drop out of school so I could work, pay rent, buy food, etc. By the time I was 16, I was living in my own rented apartment and was well experienced at breaking all four regulative principles. As I got near the end of my teenage years, I patched up my personal life with my parents and forgave them. Now my mind was clear. I could focus on finding happiness like everyone else, right? I tried everything. Having a job I loved doing, which paid a nice wage, renting a nice apartment, having nice material clothes, gadgets, electronics, numerous girlfriends, extravagant holidays, experiencing liquor, experiencing drugs. I was stuck in the endless cycle of serving the senses. But feeling empty and miserable deep inside my soul, I started to question myself, what is the real meaning of life? I could only get my friends' ideas and viewpoints when they were intoxicated. Unfortunately, they were engrossed in satisfying their senses like 99% of the world's population. I was carrying on with normal life, but was going deeper and deeper into depression, to the point where I couldn't eat or sleep. I was finding life pointless and started to feel suicidal. It made no logical sense to my mind or heart that you're born, you grow old, you die, and that's it. How can anyone accept that if they really think about it? I decided to visit the doctor and tell him how I felt. He put me on medication and asked me to stay on an observation and to stay in an observation ward in a hospital so he could observe my behavior for 1 week. By the time they let me go, 4 weeks had passed. But this was a blessing in disguise. I had a lot of free time in the hospital, so I got everyone's philosophical viewpoint on life. One night, I spoke to this gentleman who made a lot of sense with his words. He told me he had met devotees. He also had taken books and was chanting. I told him I would like to know more, but was leaving in a few days. So he gave me his Bhagavad Gita. The doctors released me, but had signed me off work for a minimum of 12 months. I was now living at my older sister's house on a temporary arrangement, reading a couple of pages of the Gita on a daily basis. Over the next 3 to 4 weeks, I got this amazing taste and attachment to the Bhagavad Gita. And before I knew it, I was reading over 2 hours a day. I felt within my heart that Krishna was speaking the Gita to me. And within 3 months, I had finished the entire book. I looked at the back of the book for the nearest temple to me and walked there. I was convinced within my heart that this is what I had been searching for my entire existence. I told the devotees my story. They gave me some books, japa beads, and told me to come back for the weekend. When I returned that following weekend, I never left. Hare Krishna. So this is an example of the power of Srila Prabhupada's books. The association of Srila Prabhupada's books can can bring one into Krishna's association and the association of his devotees. So that's the first quality we should strive for, humility. And there's actually 20 qualities that are described. Another important quality that Srila Prabhupada mentions at the end of this chapter is acharyopasanam. Acharyopasanam means or refers to taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. He says, if one accepts a spiritual master, one can learn to distinguish between matter and spirit, and that becomes the stepping stone for further spiritual realization. In the fourth chapter, Krishna says, Tadviri pranipatina pariprashnina sevaya upadikshanti te jnanam jnananas tattva darshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they've seen the truth. And another important point Srila Prabhupada makes here is that a spiritual master, by various instructions, teaches his students to get free from the material concept of life. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna in the second chapter, Asochan anvasochas tvam pragyavadam shabashase, that you are lamenting for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. So, practically right off, after Arjuna surrenders, practically right away, Krishna chastises Arjuna. Because that's one of the characteristics that the spiritual master may manifest, is heaviness. Guru means heavy. But the spiritual master, according to the conditioning of the disciple, will instruct. Srila Prabhupada instructed disciples in different ways according to their situation and conditioning. Srila Prabhupada told Chamasundara Prabhu, get rid of your dog. This was in the early days, in say probably 67. And Chamasundara Prabhu was very attached to his dog. And he made all kinds of excuses. So eventually, Srila Prabhupada approached Mother Malati, his wife, and said, it's not good for Chamasundara's spiritual advancement. So you please mention to him that he should get rid of the dog. So Mother Malati followed the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, and Chamasundara got rid of the dog. So Srila Prabhupada was expert at instructing in such a way that the disciple would make spiritual advancement. Sometimes the medicine has to be administered with some sugar, with some sweetness, because the patient is very sensitive. The ego, the false ego, sometimes is very sensitive. So another example, this is also in the early days, Srila Prabhupada was leading a kirtan, and all of a sudden one of his disciples, he came up to Srila Prabhupada, he was crying, and Srila Prabhupada stopped the kirtan, and he comforted this devotee. He put this devotee's head on his lap and patted him on the head. And the devotee, as he was sobbing, he said, I love you, Srila Prabhupada, but I can't stay. I can't approach God through anyone. I have to approach Him directly. And with these words, he got up and he left. But As he was saying this to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada said, I only want the best for you. I only want you to be happy. And saying this, this disciple left. This is the mood of the spiritual master. The spiritual master doesn't chastise or instruct the disciple out of false ego. Actually, spiritual master does it out of great compassion and love for the disciple. So, Acharya Upasanam means to accept the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. So, we'll conclude. This chapter is very technical, but the essence is by developing humility and the other 19 qualities that are mentioned in verse 8 to 12 of this chapter. Everything else will come in due course. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Grantara Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.